Oh boy, ladies and gentlemen, do we have something for you today? This is funny. Brady and I independently and unbeknownst to each other have both been kind of like talking to Zach Calton back and forth on Instagram. And, you know, when we started the podcast, we've said this a handful of times. We're like, oh, it'd be cool if you had a podcast and we could interview some people. And then we kind of had this like short list of 5 or 10 kind of like big names in Utah. And like we've hit a few of them. You know, like Hannah and Art and stuff, and like Zach's one that I've wanted to talk to forever. We just finished recording that.
Yeah. So thanks to Brady for reaching out to Zach and,
but Brady, I got it across the finish line. So there you go.
Brady did like 90% of the work on that. And then Joe just kind of somehow sweetened the deal a little bit.
I feel like I've followed Zach on Instagram or whatever, and you know, both being like true bike nerds, you just kind of have like, oh, cool bike, oh, that's sick, you know, and be like, oh, you should be on the podcast, oh yeah, for sure, and then it just didn't. I think it was a couple more times. But anyway, it was a really good episode. I mean, you guys, you know, like the people who listen to this know for sure that like Zach does a lot of podcasts, and he's good at it. We got some really interesting stuff out of this. So before we jump into that. Just a couple things to go over.
Well, it's funny because before this Zach Calton thing kind of happened suddenly, and originally this was going to be our Halloween episode.
So
you guys are missing. I was kind of like thinking about deep diving into the Icelandic elves for our Halloween episode, but you guys get Zach Calton instead. So
how cool is that? You know, it's funny. Tessa asked me, she's like, you guys are like 3 years into this podcast. Like, what do you still have to talk about? I'm like, Icelandic elves. You know, we're going to explain like tax filing procedures in Korea next week. Like we are out of topics. But yeah, it's a real good one. So before we jump in,
announcements.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm excited. Frog Hollow is coming up. Super cool day for me, just seeing all the Maybird riders out there. And it's an event that Maybird really, really
owns.
It kind of owns. Yeah. I think about a quarter of the people racing there are Maybird riders. It's just a cool thing for me to see, and just brings me a lot of pride and joy. So I'm excited for that. Leading up to that, I just have some thoughts on that. So everyone knows our own legend, Amy Larkin. She did that big running race. And anyhow, she ended up getting the rhabdo.
And, oh, shoot, really?
Yeah. And had to go to the hospital. And so I guess if you're doing, especially for those that are doing like the 12-hour, the 25-hour versions, just make sure you're eating plenty and that you're drinking plenty. And Amy made sure we point out that you're actually drinking a mix, not just water. She had a little bit of hyponatremia too.
We say in a cross country race, it's like, man, you know, to optimize your performance, you really have to make sure you're hitting these eating goals, water, whatever. But like with this, it's like, hey, to make sure your body doesn't shut off and you die, like you need to make you, it's not just a, hey, we're going to optimize. It's more of a, hey, we like it when you stay alive. Cause it's a lot of paperwork when you guys don't. So have that. I mean, that needs to be part of your strategy that you figure out. And you actually kind of have to stick to if you want to do this.
Yeah, more fuel than you think you need, and drink a mix, and take care of yourself. So, but it's going to be a fun weekend. I'm super excited to be out there.
Interesting to find out Larkins are mortal, huh?
Barely. Yeah.
Interesting. But yeah, that'll be really good. I do want to say people have been asking about the Zwift rides. Those will start soon. Daylight savings is Sunday. But the weather's still going to be pretty warm next week. So I don't know. I'm going to kind of take a look and see how things look. If I Zwift, I will just chuck a link up on my Instagram. Maybe a few people do that, but I think pretty quickly we're going to get into the part of the season here where it is cold and dark and people really aren't riding outside. So the Zwift rides will be starting soon. I'm not quite ready to commit to a time on those, but please come. We're going to pitch this real hard all winter. We get groups of 20, 30 people. There's all sorts of different paces going on. It's a really, really good time. And one of these days I'll figure out how to incorporate it with Discord, because I know that's a thing that can be done. I just haven't had the time to dig into that. So those are coming up as well. Outside of that,
happy Halloween, everyone. We're actually recording on Halloween night.
We are. There you go. I'm going to try to run home and Zwift really quick before dinner. And then, yeah, So okay. Be safe. I guess we probably won't release this till after Halloween, but hopefully you had a good and safe, fun Halloween. This episode with Zach is fantastically good.
And if you do want an episode about the Icelandic elves, reach out, let me know.
Secret word, Icelandic elves. I guess that's about as straightforward as it could be. I was going to say rhabdomyolysis, but that sounds like you'd have to look that up to spell it. So should we do Icelandic elves?
Sure.
Icelandic elves.
Okay. Enjoy the episode with Zach. It's awesome.
Good stuff.
Well, before anything else, Zach, you are getting married soon, right? I figure that's the big thing we should start with.
That is big. Yeah. We're 25 days out. So sweet. Happening quick. Yeah. I'm stoked.
Sweet, dude. You guys got engaged like end of last year, right?
Yeah. We got engaged on Christmas last year. So.
Wow. That's, yeah. You look bad. That's way more romantic than what I did. Good for you.
I don't know. Sometimes I think like you rob Christmas, you know, I don't know, but it worked out.
Dude, that's good, man. Well, congrats. I was going through trying to like put together like because I kind of have this rough idea of all the stuff you've won, you know, and just going through this year, I was like, that's kind of enough stuff. I have a list here. You can correct me if any of this is wrong, but just like I scrolled through your Instagram for 3 minutes and came out. I came out with, let's see if I hit it all. Podium at Arkansas, Wasatch All Road win. Win at Point to Point, win at Crusher. You did the Cape Epic, which you said, and I've told people, you said is the hardest mountain bike race in the world. I said that to someone one time and they didn't agree with me. And I feel vindicated now that you've said that too.
It was really hard. I mean, it's hard for different reasons. You know, we could do a whole podcast on why that race is so hard, but the level is extremely high. You know, logistically it's tough. And partner racing is mentally the hardest thing I've ever done, especially when you're off, you know? So maybe it's more fun when you're both riding on a similar level, but I was having an off week and my partner Alex was having a great week. And that was like, you know, it's just one thing to like have an off day for yourself, but to kind of like drag someone else down with you is not easy to deal with mentally. So yeah, I would say it's the hardest for sure.
So I'm curious, like, do you know when do you know it's an off week? Do you know that? Like, can you just kind of feel like you just have a, because I know what an off day feels like, but I've never done multi-day racing before. And most people I think haven't. Like, are you on day three and you're like, oh, it's not going away?
This is just, day one, it was just sort of like the first climb of the, because it starts out with a prologue time trial where you just go out, the two of you. And I got up the first climb. Okay. And then from there, it's flat for a while. So ideally, you know, you'll trade poles. And Alex took one pole. I took one pole after like the 8 minute climb went fairly well. Like it was hot and I wasn't feeling awesome, but you know, I kind of also figured that was to be expected.
Yeah.
But like maybe 5 minutes after that first climb is where we started to trade poles on this. I can't really remember, but it was probably like 20K of flat ground. And I was like, I can't pull through this next time. And we're not even a third of the way through this thing. And the whole week just went downhill from there. So, I mean, I knew 10 minutes in. I mean, I obviously hoped I would pull it or, you know, turn it around. Like, you never know. But that race is just hard enough, hot enough, long enough that you never really get an opportunity to recover. Like, they didn't put any stages in that were, like, really easy or neutralized by any sort of headwind or something like a road race might do. You know, it's just flat out every single day. And so you never get an opportunity to come back from it. So I guess I didn't know it was a bad week, you know, beforehand, but in hindsight, it definitely was the full week bad.
What was like the goal you guys were, what did success? Cause I'd imagine that like your aspiration probably isn't to win it at that kind of level. Like what did success kind of look like in your mind ahead of time?
Yeah. I mean, I think looking at the following years or like this world championship, we both wanted UCI points. It was a good course for Americans, you know, high elevation, lots of climbing, a bit longer. Cause a lot of the Europeans who perform at marathon worlds are, you know, are kind of, a lot of them come from an XCO background. And like when they came to West Virginia last year, it was short. It wasn't very difficult in terms of length or climbing. And so you kind of saw the XC guys rise to the top, whereas this year it was like a proper marathon course. So that excited both Alex and I. And So that, you know, we were hoping to get a really good, chunk of UCI points with Worlds in mind, I think. And then I think a top 10, if we are both going good, it is definitely possible. You know, I've raced a lot of the guys that have podiumed this race before, and beat them head to head. It's hard to beat everyone that you've beat head to head, of course, all in one go. But I know Alex was going really good, and I think we're a good pairing. So I think a top 10 was like a super reasonable goal. Yeah, I know if we had a bit more luck, but we did not.
I like that you said the mental side. That's interesting. Is it mentally hard, like maybe to put it kind of a bluntly, because you feel like you're holding the other guy back and you're like, he could probably go faster and I'm the anchor. Like, that's got to be pretty crushing, right?
It is, yeah, it's super crushing because I mean he's obviously our goals are aligned. He knows he has to wait for me, so he, he's just encouraging me, offering to carry, water or whatever, giving me literal physical pushes. So he's giving me all the encouragement I need, but I also know like how much work, how much money, how much, effort it takes to get there. And when it's not going well and there's nothing you can really do about it, it was like, impossible to not feel guilty like pretty much the whole time. I'd just keep pushing and do what I could and try to not let that, because that's easy to like get sucked down into that and then lose focus even further and let your performance degrade even more.
Totally
But
viral, yeah.
I tried to just like, not think about it and just focus on getting the best result I could. And there were signs of life like on day two and three, guys were really starting to blow up, guys who come from an XC background, people who, maybe aren't as practiced with like fueling as us, American gravel racers are, things like that. And there were good signs at certain points that were like, okay, we can make progress if we just stay consistent and don't have any major issues. But then we did have major, or I had major issues, and Alex had a flat on one of the time trials that was unfixable, and we took a wrong turn one day. I broke a wheel one day and ran like or walked like a half marathon to the tech zone. So from there, it was really pretty much impossible to like stay in it mentally for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To maybe go back to the beginning, like you're a Nike kid to begin with, right? And
Yep.
I actually remember you back in your Summit days.
Oh yeah. Oh
Yeah,
yeah.
when you show up at iCups in your Summit kit and just amazed at how fast you were. And as you probably know, like most of the people that really listen to this podcast and this podcast is kind of dedicated to is more like the youth cyclists. And so
Right.
That's who we really try to address with each episode. And so I just kind of had some questions that I thought might be interesting to, those that may or may not know you yet. But my first question is kind of tell us kind of your backstory of how you began cycling and how you fell in love with it and where that all kind of came from.
Yeah, I'm a Nike kid, like Joe said. My first race was my junior year of high school, which I was 2013, I want to say. It's like year two or three of Nike in general. And I didn't even join at the beginning of the season. My first mountain bike race was that, I think it was Snow Basin, and it was because that's our local race. I went to Ogden High, and I got last place in JV or maybe second to last or something.
Love it.
And it was so unbelievably hard. We have some photos of that day and I'm like pale and sick and just like, yeah, it was brutal. But I agreed to go to the next one and I went from like, I can't remember how many were in each field. It's gotten bigger
Yeah.
and still, but
Last place was a top 10 back then, so that made it a little less.
I mean, I think there were like 50. I think there were like 50 in JV, but it was all one,
Yeah.
there weren't six regions. But yeah, I went from like 48th to like 28th, to the next one. And then at state that year, I think I got like ninth or 10th in JV. So seeing the progression against like the same group of guys, you can kind of look around and be like, oh, that guy killed me last week, and I got him this week. That, was really addicting to me. And I ran cross country. My sisters ran collegiate cross country and track. So we're kind of come from a running family, but running just didn't quite hit the mark for me in terms, you know, just didn't keep me engaged. Like I love pushing myself. I love endurance sports, obviously, but yeah, cycling kind of had a, you know, specifically mountain biking had enough other stuff other than just suffering that kept me way more engaged. So yeah, I got linked up with that Summit team that next spring, just kind of on accident, and got exposed to some of the USA Cycling stuff. And then that's, you know, just one thing led to another, eventually attended some World Cups, and then have now gotten into this gravel and lifetime Grand Prix to style racing lately.
Oh, go ahead. I was going to ask, is, because would you, do you think it's fair to say that your career has pivoted to gravel because that's where like the growth is right now? Or is that like a passion thing that you would have done regardless of the fact that gravel's exploded? Or
I think I probably would have done it regardless. I mean, I did, when I was still all in on cross country, I did Crusher in 2018 and I won that. And I have had like one of my first races where I like felt like I kind of came on from just being like a, you know, just kind of a junior who's just having fun to like, okay, I can do well, was I believe 2017 point to point. And I hung with the leaders, which, you know, was Todd Wells just after one of his Olympic years or no, I think his last year was 2012, but Todd Wells was still very much racing full time. And I hung on with him and Keegan and Alex Grant, you know, like to like mile 30 of that race. Whereas, you know, I go to these pro XCTs and they'd eject me out the back and lap me by, you know, instantly. I never got a ride with those guys. So I think those experiences really like made me excited about marathon. And then, but the, I mean, the thing that kind of made the switch easy though, was like, I didn't like, I never like resigned and was like, I'm switching to gravel, but I did graduate college, COVID hit. My XC team that year folded like instantly, as many teams did. And I got to take a year off and just sort of have no real obligations, no racing opportunities. And then when racing kind of came back online, like really not even until 2022, that's where everything was. And I didn't really see an opportunity to get back into like cross country World Cups. You know, I wasn't good enough, didn't have results or whatever to like go pro and like live in Europe. You know, and that's what I think you kind of have to do if you want to go pro in XC. Whereas, you know, it seemed like a real opportunity was forming in gravel and marathon with the lifetime thing. So that's where I went.
At what point did you start calling yourself a professional cyclist?
That is a great question. I think I was always very insecure about that. Like I'm sure you've seen like some high level juniors will call themselves professional cyclists, you know?
I do pro midweeks. I tell people I'm a pro. I do.
Yeah. Like as soon as you sign up for a pro class race, it's like, I'm pro. And I like dabbled with that a little bit, but I never felt comfortable saying it until I got like a legit paycheck, which was only, I mean, I got like little things here and there pre-COVID, but I really only started getting like properly paid to ride in like 2024.
Wow.
So I had to do a whole year in lifetime as like I was properly in the series 23, but like completely self-funded.
And so now as I understand it, you've basically gone to several different sponsors and you're cobbling together a combination of gear from here. I mean, if you don't mind me asking, like, because this is your full-time thing. Like you don't have a day job at this point in your life, right?
I coach, which, you know, is separate, but it's obviously linked to pro racing. But yeah, I don't have a day job anymore.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. Wow. And so you're just going to, and I'm also curious to know, because I think a lot of our kids are kind of fascinated by this idea of going professional. Like when you know, you're riding with Yeti and Shimano, you know, like this handful of sponsors you're working with, what is valuable to them in you? Is it just pure, like you just submit a sheet of your results? Is there something about you specifically? Is it social media?
Yeah. I mean, I have had some of my best relationships with sponsors, through like organic connection. So like I kind of mentioned I took a break from COVID, or not a break from COVID. I took a break from racing during COVID. And as I was trying to get back into shape, I went on a training ride with Ryan Standish, who was my teammate in 2019 and going to be in 2020 before our team folded. And he was getting ready for Unbound, which I wasn't really even considering, but I was trying to getting sort of getting ready for Crusher that 2021 year, but like quite late. Like I didn't do like a proper base build like I would usually do. This was like in April maybe, and I was not in good shape, but Ryan was getting ready for Unbound with like a 120 mile ride, and I came along having no business doing a 120 mile ride. And Barrett, the now CEO of Ventum, was on that ride, and Ryan was with Ventum at the time, and we just chatted. Like I had no ambitions of being of like returning to try and be pro. I was just on a ride with my buddy Ryan, who happened to invite, his sponsor coordinator at Ventum, Barrett. And we chatted and just like really enjoyed each other's company for like 7 hours. And then I ran into him again at Crusher, which ended up going quite well that year for me. And then a few more races. I attended Wasatch All Road in 2022 and did well there. And just sort of touch bases. And Barrett is one of those guys that's like he's on the Sunday group ride up in Park City. Like he's a part of the cycling community in a major way. And then the results came. I got into Lifetime, and that opened the door for me to be sponsored by Ventum for 2024 and 2025, and hopefully into the future too. And like same with First Endurance. Burke is my sponsorship coordinator there. He originally started Crusher and the Tusher. And Sly Fox Moon Willow, I'm sure you guys know. I got a KOM in Farmington called Francis Peak, and he like screenshotted it and texted it to Burke and was like, "You should get." I can't remember exactly how it went, but it was something like, "You should give this kid an entry to your race. He'll win it," or something like that. And Burke texted back like, "No, he won't even top five. Like, I'll bet you $100." And I went and won, and Sly Fox sent me that screenshot, and I met Burke at the finish line, and he was super nice, and I didn't, he didn't know me or anything, but it was just like a funny thing. And then yeah, that kind of established that relationship and turned into a First Endurance sponsorship a couple years later. And they've been, with me. I mentioned I was self-funded through in 2023. I had one sponsor, and it was First Endurance that year. So, I think I have gotten sponsors from results and like more, the traditional route of just like get a result, send an email, share your Instagram analytics, yada yada. But the sponsors that are like the best are the ones that I've met organically, and they know that, I'm represent the brand well, I work hard, I'm a part of the community. Those are the sponsors that I feel like are the most long lasting. So I think that's important to keep in mind for up and comers.
That's interesting. I'm sorry, I'm ch jumping all over your questions, but
Oh.
one thing I want to say before Dan asks is, and this is something, if you don't mind me saying, that impressed me about you. I remember it was, I don't even remember how long ago it was, but your bike sponsor at the time, it was Pink Bike or someone who did a big XC bike field test, and your bike wasn't in it, and you were like in the comments, like making this really well laid out argument for why like the bike that you were riding at the time really belonged there and advocating for it. And I will say, as someone who's like been in the bike industry a long time, I you kind of developed a skepticism. You're like, people ride whatever because they get paid or whatever. But you've always been like, when you ride something or use something, that's interesting to me. Like your opinions have always kind of carried more weight for me. And maybe that's with the Venom guys, like they, I mean, they've got what, like Armstrong and Wiggins riding Venoms and stuff right now. Like I love the beyond just like, oh, this guy won this or whatever. Like people who are like knowledgeable and know people in the community. Like if I see you're riding something, I'm like, that's interesting. That's something I'm gonna scroll in and take a look at what you're doing on your bike, you know?
I appreciate that. And like, yeah, I mean, I worked in a bike shop to fund my racing for a long time. I worked at Specialized for a minute in just customer service and warranty and stuff. So I've been in the bike industry in a lot of different ways, and I have a ton of passion. And I think some people work in a bike shop and it's just like for deals and things, but I got really into working on bikes just as its own thing. And I really enjoy that side of the sport too. So yeah, I always tried to like be like, okay, if I'm one of the few guys who's like actually getting a box of parts and building the bike and feeling what it's like. And, you know, hopefully I can use that extra insight to say something unique other than just like awesome race on my bike, you
Right,
know?
yeah.
So.
Well, maybe this is my segue into Dan's. Like, you seem to have the real passion for it, not just as a rider, but as like, you know, someone who's been in the industry. Like, what do you think it is about cycling particularly, and maybe not running like the rest of your family's doing, that brings you this kind of joy?
It's so tough to say. I think it's, I mean, it's a lot of stuff, you know. I really love competing. I love racing, and that's not really unique to cycling. But that is probably the largest piece of the pie. But I love like exploring, you know, like I just think the bike is the best balance between like, you know, even if you go on a big run, it's like you're going like 5 miles out and 5 miles back. You're not really getting anywhere, you know. Whereas with cycling, you can like, you know, I can start in Ogden and ride all the way to Big Mountain on the backside and back home, and that's an epic day. I see the whole valley. I just think it's really cool. I get a lot of satisfaction of making like a nice Strava map loop, you know. I like the power meter game. I like, you know, looking at the numbers. I like training and you know, all the gear. So it's, I mean, it's a lot of stuff that's additive at its core, though, like for sure competing and training and like the feeling of being fit and, you know, the group rides on the weekends with your friends, you know, that's going to be like the most fundamental thing about it for me.
So when you think about your career from Nika to now, what part was it most joyful? What like would you say? When were you experiencing the most joy?
Oh man. That's such a good question. 'Cause it comes in waves, you know? Like I don't want to say like, oh, it used to be better or it's better now than it used to be. But I honestly, like in 2022 and 2023, when I was just getting back into it, like I kind of mentioned, I took my little break. I got a really good group of friends who were all sort of, I think we were kind of all in the same boat where we, you know, at one point or another had been like pro or semi-pro or whatever, but COVID kind of derailed things. And we're just all getting back into it and kind of realizing like, you know, we really do like this sport even after a break. You know, you get a little more clarity. You get to like see what it's like to not have that sort of thing in your life and be like, you know what, I actually really do like it and want to keep going. And I probably just rode with them more than I ever had rode with like groups of people. 'Cause I'm up in Ogden and there's a scene up here, but it's definitely less than Salt Lake. There's not as many group rides going on. There's definitely less young riders up here. So I train a lot and always have trained a lot by myself, like from the get-go. And that was a cool experience just because I got like my first consistent like training group where we were like 2, 3 days a week. And that was when we started TNE, which started with like four of us. And we're just like, you know what, we got to get like an office, because it kind of just started like office group ride after work. And then the Sprat showed up and it kind of turned into a group ride race pretty quickly. And then it just grew and it became like its own thing. And
Yeah, it's
now,
an event.
you know, it's hard to fit it in sometimes with training, and I no longer work in Salt Lake, so it's not quite as easy for me to make it down. So I don't even attend it as much, but I still get a lot of pride about seeing that event be like its own thing. It no longer requires maintenance, you know, it has its own like spirit now. So I think that's really cool. And the things that led to that too were a ton of fun. So yeah, I think, you know, that's like the closest I've been on teams, but like that was honestly the most team experience I've had, because I've spent a lot of time as a privateer too, but we were all kind of working towards a common goal at that time, and it was a ton of fun. We called ourselves Club S at the time, and yeah, it was just good times. But
Well, and that's one thing we've noticed with the youth cyclists is if they can get in this little group of friends that kind of feed off each other's energy and work together and ride together, it's amazing what can happen to those groups if you can find one. So we really try to encourage that with the youth athletes to to just have some buddies that you can ride with. It's pretty magical, really.
100%. Yeah, it's really cool. And I love what you guys have done. And yeah, I mean, you guys know I was on Summit. That's the closest thing I've been on to like a program like Maybird. But yeah, I coach a few athletes who are on Maybird and a few athletes who aren't on Maybird, but are, the Venn diagrams intersect. And it's really fun to see both, like, that it's still alive and thriving, and people have their little friend groups and high school teams and club teams that they get to, ride with and feed off of.
It's awesome. So my next question would be is, what would your advice be to youth cyclists to keep it fun, to so there's some longevity so they can, what would your advice be there?
Yeah, I mean, I think one thing, especially as travel becomes big and, the training methods and the food habits and the high carb fueling becomes like way more public. You don't even really have to follow anyone. You get on Reels and it's like it comes to you. And I think just remembering and realizing that once you graduate high school, NYCA's done. Once you are no longer U23, like you're probably gonna like cross country is pretty hard to like be a part of anymore. And I just think I've had a few athletes who want to jump ship from those things like early. And I whether or not that's because they want to pursue like US cycling cross country and they think like NYCA's not their thing, or they want to pursue gravel and so cross country and as a general sport is not their thing. But I still think these NYCA specifically and cross country has like the best, the most deep, junior roots, the biggest group that you're going to have the easiest time finding riding groups and buddies and developing your skills is going to be the easiest, because I think it's way easier to develop your skills with a bunch of friends going down to St. George in the winter, or just sessioning some jumps at I Street, or going to Corner Canyon with a bunch of buddies, than it'll ever be when you're in or post college or whatever. And I think just not taking those opportunities for granted and developing your skills and having fun and not getting so stressed about this extreme process is really key.
I completely agree. I think that's great advice, to there's so many cool opportunities now with NYCA and with all these groups, and to start doing monk solo training at this point just really doesn't make a lot of sense, like that you definitely kind of lose those opportunities as you get older. And so I think that's great advice.
Yeah.
Yeah, have you ever dealt with like discouragement or burnout or overtraining, and how was that, and how did you kind of find your way back?
Definitely. Yeah, I know. I think you need to figure out why, like what's going on. I think a lot of times it's physical. Sometimes it's emotional, sometimes it's mental, sometimes it's stuff that has nothing to do with cycling that's weighing on you, that has to be addressed. But so figuring out what's really the cause and being honest about that is really important. And I've had different periods throughout my career where I've faced burnout for various reasons. That just earlier this spring, kind of after Cape Epic and having a bad race there, and but continuing to have to race for I was racing for about 30 hours that week from the gun like off, and I did not come back from that like physically or and then in turn mentally for like 4 months. That was just this year. And so what finally just like I don't know broke the curse or whatever for me was just taking a week off the bike completely. I went to New York with my family and I didn't bring a bike, didn't think about a bike, didn't worry about anything. And I think there was like physical rest was like a big part of it, but also like mental rest and just like accepting where I was, because, you know, especially as a pro, but I think even non-pros get very neurotic about the status of things, losing, you know, losing 1%, even if it means, even if like consciously, you know, you need to take this rest week, you need to take this thing, like it makes sense to you, you believe it, like actually executing, actually taking the time, actually relaxing, not thinking about it is really, really difficult for any sort of like type A athlete. But if you can do it and lean into that, I think that's how I've gotten through all of those like mental or physical burnouts. Cause I think they're, you know, I think they're related for sure. And then just managing your relationship with it before it happens, you know, like, you know, letting it sit with you and be like, okay, this just happened. What led to it happening and how can I avoid it again? And it's probably going to be like, you know, being more respectful of your rest days, your rest weeks, being more respectful of how often and how long your races are, especially now that races seem to be like 6 hours by default. And then like making sure you're eating enough, you know, there's like kind of the key things like that. And then just making sure you're excited about it. Like if you're getting sunk down in, you know, like you say, monk mode training by yourself, well, that's probably because you're isolating yourself and you should probably go out and do a group ride or go to TNE or go to the Saturday, or excuse me, the Sunday Spark City ride, or go to the Maybird practice, or go to your Nika practice that you've been skipping, you know, and just have fun and work on your skills or change it up. And I think it's more refreshing than people think.
I'm really curious to know, because you and I are about, I think you're maybe a year or two older than me, so we're maybe in the same boat here. You mentioned like stress has nothing to do with the bike. I have spent a lot of time adjusting post-college to what life is like post-college. What are like the big off the bike stressors that you have? Because I really think that like we don't talk enough about, I mean, what, like 90% of Nika kids sort of fall off post-Nika. Like,
yeah.
How do you balance, I mean, college for one, but then like relationships and the other grown-up stuff that has nothing to do with the bike?
Yeah, I mean,
because it's killing me.
Great question. Yeah, it's not easy. It's not easy. And I think you just have to be, at least for me, it's like I have to be honest about my priorities, you know? Like when I finished college, like during college, actually, that's where I wasn't really honest with myself about my priorities. And I paid for it both in like my grades and, you know, like just my overall stress level all the time. Like I couldn't decide if I wanted to be a pro cyclist or I wanted to like be the best student ever, or I wanted to like, you know, not have to take out student loans and work a ton at the shop and, you know, whatever it ended up being. But I just kind of did all three mediumly, you know, or maybe worse than medium. And I took that break after college and kind of came back and was for the first time kind of mentioned, like, when did you first start calling yourself a pro? And like, that was the first time I was able to like, honestly be like, communicate with my partner, Lexi, my parents, you know, my support crew, the people around me, like, hey, I want to try and be professional and it's going to take like sacrifice and it's going to take, you know, this amount of time per day. It's going to take these like, you know, I got to get to bed early. I got to train when it's inconvenient for myself sometimes or others, or, you know, I need support. Like, are you willing to give me that support? And for me, and I think a lot of people, if you're able to like really be upfront about it, be sure what you want, you'll find your support crew is really willing to. But when you're unsure or like just kind of like disappearing for 5 hours on your rides and it almost seems like, you know, unplanned or like it doesn't have a goal, it's going to make less sense to people, you know? So I think just like clearly stating your priorities, and like for me, I had to put biking like really high to make my goals happen, but not everyone's like wants to or should be a pro cyclist, you know, but they still love it. But it's like, you need to make it clear with your partner, your parents, you know, whoever relevant, like, hey, I love cycling and it's like gives me, you know, helps me with my mental health, helps me de-stress from all these other things. So like, it's important to me that I get this Saturday group ride in and this Tuesday group ride and like at least two other rides a week. Cause it's like a good rhythm for me. It's healthy. It's this, it's that. At least for me, like being honest first with yourself and then stating your findings and like what you want to do with it to the most immediate support crew is like super important.
I love that. Cause this is something like, maybe when you're in high school, high school's hard, not to like minimize it, you know, and like a lot of the kids in Maybird are like super studious, but like,
yeah, kind
of everyone can act like a pro. And if you wanted to train 20 hours a week, you kind of can, but then you really have to make choices once you're financially supported. And then if you want to have a relationship too. And so for me, it's kind of like adjusting to like, well, I don't want to be a pro cyclist. Well, I do, but I can't. I suck. So like, I can't, pro cyclist isn't in the cards for me. I have to go be a pro something else. And like, that's a thing. If you want to have a family, that's another thing, you know? And then like, I mean, if we're honest, like being a pro cyclist, like there are downsides, you know, like I'm sure that there are probably easier ways you could be making money, right?
Yes. Yes.
Any other way, right? Any other way is easier for sure.
My two brother-in-laws just finished medical school and like, they actually got like advanced degrees in other things and worked before going back to medical school. So they kind of went non-traditional. And sometimes I'll like joke around and be like, I mean, I should have done something easy, like become a doctor, you know, like at least there's like a clear path. It's not easy, but it's like a path to, you know, secure career. Whereas like, you never know what the next month holds with cycling. That is for sure.
So my last question, and this is kind of a two-part question, but it's a question whenever I get to talk to a pro cyclist, I always love to ask this. And is there something you know is you that someone like Joe or I wouldn't know as amateurs? Is there like a secret out there that the pros know that makes all the difference that we're just not aware of?
No, I mean, has anyone said yes? I'm curious.
No.
Yeah, I would say no. Yeah, and I think anyone who tells you yes is probably full of it. But
I also figure if there was, they wouldn't tell me in this format. But
yeah.
But so my next question is how is your training as a pro different than what you would advise to like a youth athlete you're coaching? Or is it the same or is it different or?
You know, I think it's less different than people maybe think, you know, I think people really overvalue the idea of like a secret session, like some interval session that they just aren't doing or something that's like, that's the one, that's the pros, they hide it on Strava or, you know, you're not capable of doing it or something like that. And if they, you know, could get in, you know, someone would unlock the gate for them on those types of workouts, they'd have it. Or volume, like, is some secret. Like, I think a lot of people especially think like if they can just ride more, 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 it will happen quicker. And the truth is you have a lot of limits, some genetic, some, you know, time and stress induced, right? You can't train 30 hours a week and do high school and do a job. And, you know, like you have to pick and choose like where you spend your mental bullets, because if you're waking up stressed about work or school, and then you do this really hard workout that stresses you out, and then you have homework that stresses you out, and you're just like stressed every single day, like your body is not gonna, like, I find that the best pros and the best amateurs are people who manage their stress the best, you know, and truly let cycling be like an outlet for themselves. And so in that way, I think, I don't know, I think some people associate like the suck with performance. And I think people would be surprised how much training doesn't suck. I mean, you got to like it for sure. And it's long and whatever, but like, you shouldn't feel like defeated by it. It should feel good. It should still give you the feelings that like you probably originally fell in love with cycling for. And that's probably what's going to end up making you faster. And, you know, as you get more time or more opportunities, sure, you can train more, you can train a little harder, but I bet you it's not that different. And that there's no special secret sauce that, you know, you're just like not, you don't know about. You know, there's tweaking and things that coaches can help with, but it's not that complicated, to be honest.
Well, if you figure it out, we can make you rich somehow. So
Okay, cool.
we don't,
I'll
no, that's not what we do. That's what we're about.
let
You have rapid fire. I have a couple rapid fire questions.
Okay, can we just ask you some fun rapid fire questions
For sure.
to wrap it up?
10 seconds or less. I have three.
Okay, this is my favorite question to ask anybody. What is your favorite item at your favorite restaurant?
Ooh. I immediately thought of the cheesecake at Tona, which is a sushi restaurant up here in Ogden. It's
Okay.
like, doesn't taste like cheesecake, but they call it cheesecake and it's really good.
Okay, that sounds
Yeah.
amazing. Okay, my next one, since it's Halloween, what's your favorite Halloween candy? Reese's.
Reese's.
There you
Reese's.
go.
I was close. Almost went over the time
Reese's.
limit.
Last
Okay.
one? Are those your only two?
Well, my last one would be, what's your favorite local trail to ride on?
That you're willing to talk
Oh. Sardine, Essanville Basin.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I don't know if you guys have ridden it. It's just
I have
like on
actually.
the other side of the parking
Yes.
lot of the Nika course. Yeah.
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 I like
Classic.
it. Okay. My
Okay, your
three.
turn.
My three. Most underrated rider in the Grand Prix.
Oh, Braden Lang. I guess he kind of got rated this year. So maybe not anymore, but for a long time, very
No, that's
underrated.
fair. Okay.
Yeah.
Is Pogacar better than Merckx? Is he the GOAT? Where do you fall on GOAT?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. Yeah. You could take
That's
away
Nick Bruno's
2025 and he's still better than Eddie.
opinion.
2025 is just bonus.
Okay, last one. Are drop bars on full suspension mountain bikes, is this a flash in the pan thing we'll look back on and laugh, or is this like a legit thing that we're going to keep seeing?
I think it's a legit thing at Leadville.
Okay.
That's it. Yeah. I don't think it's going to be like a thing. We'll see though.
One more. Okay. I actually have one more.
Yeah.
32-inch, is 32-inch going to be a thing? Or is this just pink bike like click farming?
32 inches absolutely going to be a thing.
Uh-oh. Okay.
So
Maybe
yeah.
get a new bike next
That's
year.
like, to be clear, that's like, I'm just going off of my own vibes. I
You're
think
not
it will
speaking
be.
for
I'm not
Yeti.
like leaking anything here. Yeah. But
We're
I
going
think
to call this Zach Calton leaks 32-inch bike
Yeah,
and
no.
finally break the
I'm
500
like pro, but I'm not like that kind of pro, you know. I have no chest
meter
rules or anything. They don't tell me anything.
mark. Dude, Zach, I really appreciate it, man. This is I honestly think you should replace Dan. We'll do a poll.
Whoa,
I
whoa,
was gonna say, I was like, man, this guy's good at podcasts. You must do podcasts all the time.
whoa.
Dude, that was awesome. I really appreciate it. Happy Halloween. Congratulations. Married life's awesome. It's super cool. I wish you guys all the happiness and we'll talk to you guys next week.
Yeah, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you guys. Likewise, I really appreciate it and happy Halloween to you and appreciate the good send off to my marriage. We're, you know, got a long way to go.
That's
So
good stuff, man. All right, we'll talk to you guys next week.
right, we'll see ya.